Chapter 18. Into the Ways. Buttoning up his coat, Perrin paused, looking at the axe still secured on the wall as he had left it since drawing it out of the door. He did not like the idea of carrying the weapon again, but he untied the belt from the peg and buckled it around his waist anyway. The hammer he tied to his already stuffed saddlebags. Draping saddlebags and blanket roll over his shoulder, he gathered a filled quiver and his unstrung longbow from the corner. The rising sun poured heat and light through the narrow windows. The rumpled bed was the only proof that anyone had stayed here. Already the room had lost the feel of him. It even seemed to smell empty, despite his own scent on the sheets. He never stayed anywhere long enough to make that feel cling past his readiness to leave. Never long enough to put down roots, make it any kind of home. Well, I'm going home now. Turning his back on the already unoccupied room, he went out. Gaul rose easily from where he had been squatting against the wall beneath a tapestry of men on horseback hunting lions. He bore all of his weapons, with two leather water bottles and a rolled blanket and a small cook pot were strapped beside the worked leather bow case on his back. He was alone. "The others?" Perrin asked, and Gaul shook his head. "Too long away from the threefold land. I warned you of that, Perrin. These lands of yours are too wet. The air is like breathing water. There are too many people too close together. They have seen more than they want of strange places."
"I understand," Perrin said,
though what he understood was that there would be no rescue after all, no company of Aiel to drive the White Cloaks out of the True Rivers. He kept his disappointment inside. It was sharp after thinking he had escaped his fate, but he could not say he had not prepared himself for the alternative. No point in crying when the iron split. You just reforged it. "Did you have any trouble doing what I asked?"
"None. I told one Tyran to take each thing you want to the Dragonwall Gate stable, and to tell no one of it. They will have seen one another there, but they will think the things are for me, and they will keep silent. The Dragonwall Gate. You would think the spine of the world was just over the horizon instead of 100 leagues or more off."
The Aiel hesitated.
"The girl and the Ogier make no secret of their preparations, Perrin. She has been trying to find the Gleeman and telling everyone she means to travel the ways."
Scratching his beard, Perrin breathed heavily, close to a growl.
"If she gives me away to Moraine, I vow she'll not sit down for a week."
"She is very handy with those knives," Gaul said in a neutral tone.
"Not handy enough. Not if she's given me away."
Perrin hesitated. No company of Aiel. The gallows still waited.
"Gaul, if anything happens to me, if I give you the word, take Fael away. She might not want to go, but take her anyway. See her safely out of the Two Rivers. Will you promise me that?" "I will do what I can, Perrin. For the blood debt I owe you, I will."
Gaul sounded doubtful, but Perrin did not think Fael's knives would be enough to stop him. They took back passages as much as possible, and narrow stairs meant to carry servants unobtrusively. Perrin thought it too bad the Tyrans had not given servants their own corridors as well. Still, they saw few people, even in the broad hallways with their gilded lampstands and ornate hangings, and no nobles at all. He commented on the absence, and Gaul said,
"Randolph Thor has called them to the Heart of the Stone."
Perrin only grunted, but he hoped Moraine had been among those summoned. He wondered whether this was Rand's way of helping him escape her. Whatever the reason, he was glad enough to take advantage of it. They stepped out of the last cramped stairway onto the ground floor of the stone, where cavernous hallways as wide as roads led to all the outer gates. There were no wall hangings here. Black iron lamps and iron brackets high in the walls lit the windowless passages, and the floor was paved with broad, rough stones able to stand long wear from horses' shod hooves. Perrin picked his pace up to a trot. The stables lay just inside ahead down the great tunnel, the wide dragon wall gate itself standing open beyond, and only a handful of defenders for guard. Moraine could not intercept them now, not without the Dark One's own luck.
The stable's open doorway was an arch 15 paces across. Perrin took one step inside and stopped. The air was heavy with the smell of straw and hay, underlaid with grain and oats, leather, and horse manure. Stalls filled with fine Tyran horses, prized everywhere, lined the walls, with Morn rows across the wide floor. Dozens of grooms were at work, currying and combing, mucking out, mending tack. Without pausing, one or another sometimes glanced at where Fael and Loyal stood, booted and ready for travel. And beside them, Bane and Chiad, accoutred like Gaul with weapons and blankets, water bottles and cooking pot.
"Are they why you only said you would try?"
Perrin asked quietly. Gaul shrugged.
"I will do what I can, but they will take her side. Chiad is Goshin.
Her clan makes a difference?"
"Her clan and mine have blood feud, Perrin, and I am no spear sister to her. But perhaps the water oaths will hold her. I will not dance spears with her unless she offers."
Perrin shook his head. "A strange people. What were water oaths?" What he said, though, was, "Why are they with her?"
"Bane says they wish to see more of your lands, but I think it is the argument between you and Fael which fascinates them. They like her, and when they heard of this journey, they decided to go with her instead of you."
"Well, as long as they keep her out of trouble."
He was surprised when Gaul threw back his head and laughed. It made him scratch his beard worriedly. Loyal came toward them, long eyebrows sagging anxiously. His coat pockets bulged, as was usual when he was traveling, mainly with the angular shapes of books. At least his limp seemed better.
"Fael is becoming impatient, Perrin. I think she might insist on leaving any minute. Please hurry. You could not even find the waygate without me. Not that you should try, certainly. You humans make me leap about so I can hardly find my own head. Please hurry."
"I will not leave him," Fael called. "Not even if he is yet too stubborn and foolish to ask a simple favor. Should that be the case, he may still follow me like a lost puppy. I promise to scratch his ears and take care of him." The Aiel women doubled over laughing. Gaul leaped straight up suddenly, kicking higher, 2 paces or more above the floor, while twirling one of his spears.
"We will follow like stalking ridge cats," he shouted, "like hunting wolves."
He landed easily, lightly. Loyal stared at him in amazement. Bane, on the other hand, lazily combed her short, fiery hair with her fingers.
"I have a fine wolf skin with my bedding in the hold," she told Chiad in a bored voice. "Wolves are so easily taken."
A growl rose in Perrin's throat, pulling both women's eyes to him. For a moment, Bane looked on the point of saying something more, but she frowned at his yellow stare and held her peace, not afraid, but suddenly wary.
"This puppy is not well housebroken yet," Fael confided to the Aiel women.
Perrin refused to look at her. Instead, he went to the stall that held his dun stallion, as tall as any of the Tyran animals, but heavier in shoulder and haunch. Waving away a groom, he bridled Stepper and led him out himself. The grooms had walked the horse, of course, but he had been confined enough to frisk in the quick steps that made Perrin give him his name. Perrin soothed him with the sure confidence of a man who had shoed many horses. It was no trouble at all putting his high-cantled saddle on and lashing his saddlebags and blanket roll behind. Gaul watched with no expression. He would not ride a horse unless he had to, and then not a step farther than absolutely necessary. None of the Aiel would. Perrin did not understand why. Pride, perhaps, in their ability to run for long distances. The Aiel made it seem more than that, but he suspected none of them could have explained. The pack horse had to be ready too, of course, but that was quickly done, since everything Gaul had ordered was waiting in a neat pile. Food and water skins, oats and grain for the horses. None of that would be available in the ways. A few other things, like hobbles, some horse medicines, just in case, spare tinderbox, and such. Most of the space in the wicker hampers went for leather bottles like those the Aiel used for water, only larger and filled with lamp oil.
Once the lanterns on long poles were strapped atop the rest, it was done. Thrusting his unstrung bow under the saddle girth, he swung up into Stepper's saddle with the pack animal's lead in hand. And then had to wait, seething. Loyal was already mounted on a huge, hairy, fetlocked horse, taller than any other in the stable by hands, yet reduced nearly to pony size by the Ogier's long legs hanging down. There had been a time when the Ogier was almost as unwilling a rider as the Aiel, but he was at home on a horse now. It was Fail who took her time, examining her mount almost as if she had never seen the glossy black mare before, though Perrin knew she had put the horse through her paces before buying, soon after they came to the stone. The horse, Swallow by name, was a fine animal of Tyran breeding, with slender ankles and an arched neck, a prancer with a look of speed and endurance both, though shod too lightly for Perrin's taste. Those shoes would not last. It was all another effort to put him in his place, whatever she thought that was. When Fail finally mounted, in her narrow divided skirts, she reined closer to Perrin. She rode well, woman and horse moving as one.
"Why can you not ask, Perrin?" she said softly. "You tried to keep me away from where I belong, so now you have to ask. Can such a simple thing be so difficult?"
The stone rang like a monstrous bell, the stable floor leaping, the ceiling quivering on the point of coming down. Stepper leaped too, screaming, head flailing. It was all Perrin could do to keep his seat. Grooms scrambled off the floor where they had fallen and ran desperately to quiet horses rearing, shrieking, attempting to climb out of their stalls. Loyal clung to the neck of his huge mount, but Fail sat Swallow surely as the mare danced and squealed wildly. Rand. Perrin knew it was him. The pull of Taviran dragged at him, two whirlpools in a stream drawing one another. Coughing in the falling dust, he shook his head as hard as he could, straining not to dismount and run back up into the stone.
"We ride," he shouted, while tremors still shook the fortress. "We ride now, Loyal. Now!"
Fail seemed to see no more point to delay. She heeled her mare out of the stable beside Loyal's taller horse. Their two pack animals pulled along, all galloping before they reached the Dragon Wall Gate. The defenders took one look and scattered, some still on hands and knees. It was their duty to keep people out of the stone, and they had no orders to keep these in. Not that they would necessarily have been able to think straight enough to do so, even if they had had orders. Not with the tremors just subsiding and the stone still groaning above them. Perrin was right behind with his own pack horse, wishing the Ogier's animal could run faster, wishing he could leave Loyal's lumbering mount behind and outrun the suction trying to draw him back. That pull of Taviran to Taviran. They galloped together through the streets of Tyr, toward the rising sun, barely slowing to avoid carts and carriages. Men in tight coats and women with layered aprons, still shaken by the upheaval, stared at them, dazed, sometimes barely leaping out of the way. At the walls of the inner city, paving stones gave way to dirt, shoes and coats to bare feet and bare chests above baggy breeches held up by broad sashes. The Fokir dodged no less assiduously, though, for Perrin would not let Stepper slow until they had galloped past the city's outer wall, past the simple stone houses and shops that clustered outside the city proper, into a countryside of scattered farms and thickets, and beyond the pull of Taviran. Only then, breathing almost as hard as his lathered horse, he reined Stepper to a walk. Loyal's ears were stiff with shock. Fail licked her lips and stared from the Ogier to Perrin, white-faced.
What happened? Was that him?
I don't know, Perrin lied. I have to go, Rand. You know that. You looked me in the face when I told you and said I had to do what I thought I must.
Where are Bane and Chiad? Fail said. It will take them an hour to catch up now. I wish they would ride. I offered to buy them horses and they looked offended.
Well, we need to walk the horses anyway after that, to let them cool down. Perrin held back from telling her she did not know as much of the Aiel as she thought she did. He could see the city walls behind them and the stone rearing above like a mountain. He could even make out the sinuous shape on the banner waving over the fortress and the displaced birds swirling about. Neither of the others could have. It was no difficulty at all to see three people running toward them in long, ground-eating strides, their flowing ease belying the pace. He did not think he could have run that fast, not for long, but the Aiel had to have maintained their speed from the stone to be this close behind.
"We'll not have to wait that long," he said.
Fail frowned back toward the city.
"Is that them? Are you certain?"
Abruptly the frown shifted to him for a moment, daring him to answer. Asking him had been too much like admitting he was part of her party, of course.
"He is very boastful of his eyesight," she told Loyal. "But his memory is not very good. At times I think he would forget to light a candle at night if I did not remind him. I expect he's seen some poor family running from what they think is an earthquake, don't you?"
Loyal shifted uncomfortably in his saddle, sighing heavily and muttered something about humans that Perrin doubted was complimentary. Fail did not notice, of course. Not too many minutes later, Fail stared at Perrin as the three Aiel drew close enough for her to make out, but she said nothing. In this mood, she was not about to admit he had been right about anything. Not if he said the sky was blue. The Aiel were not even breathing hard when they slowed to a halt beside the horses.
"It is too bad it was not a longer run,"
Bane shared a smile with Jihad and gave Gaul a sly look.
"Else we could have run this stone dog into the ground," Jihad said, as if finishing the other woman's sentence. "That is why stone dogs take their vows not to retreat. Stone bones and stone heads make them too heavy to run."
Gaul took no offense, though Perrin noticed he stood where he could keep an eye on Jihad.
"Do you know why maidens are so often used as scouts, Perrin? Because they can run so far. And that comes from being afraid some man might want to marry them. A maiden will run 100 miles to avoid that."
"Very wise of them," Fail said tartly. "Do you need to rest?" she asked the Aiel woman, and looked surprised when they denied it.
She turned to Loyal anyway.
"Are you ready to go on? Good. Find me this waygate, Loyal. We have stayed here too long. If you let a stray puppy stay close to you, it begins to think you will take care of it, and that will never do."
"Fail," Loyal protested, "are you not carrying this too far?"
"I will carry it as far as I must, Loyal. The waygate?"
Ears sagging, Loyal puffed out a heavy breath and turned his horse eastward again. Perrin let him and Fail get a dozen paces ahead before he and Gaul followed. He must play by her rules, but he would play them at least as well as she. The farms, cramped little places with rough stone houses Perrin would not have used to shelter animals, grew more scattered the farther east they rode, and the thickets smaller, until there were neither farms nor thickets, only a rolling hilly grassland. Grass as far as the eye could see, unbroken except for patches of brush here and there on a hill. Horses dotted the green slopes too, in clumps of a dozen or herds of 100, the famed Tyran stock. Large or small, each gathering of horses was under the eyes of a shoeless boy or two, mounted bareback. The boys carried long-handled whips that they used to keep the horses together, or turn them, cracking the whips expertly to turn astray without ever coming close to the animal's hide. They kept their charges clear of the strangers, moving them back if necessary, but they watched the passage of this odd company, two humans and an Ogier mounted, plus three of the fierce Aiel that story said had taken the stone, with the bold curiosity of the young. It was all a pleasing sight to Perrin. He liked horses. Part of the reason he had asked to be apprenticed to Master Luhan had been the chance to work with horses, not that there were so many as this in Emmons Field, nor so fine. "Not so Loyal," the Ogier began muttering to himself, louder the farther they rode across the grassy hills, until at last he burst out in a deep bass rumble.
"Gone. All gone, and for what? Grass. Once this was an Ogier grove. We did no great works here, not to compare with Manetherin or the city you call Camelon, but enough that a grove was planted. Trees of every kind, from every land and place. The great trees towering 100 spans into the sky, all tended devotedly, to remind my people of the steading they had left to build things for men. Men think it is the stonework we prize, but that is a trifling thing, learned during the long exile after the breaking. It is the trees we love. Men thought Manetherin my people's greatest triumph, but we knew it to be the grove there. Gone now, like this. Gone, and it will not come again.
Loyal stared at the hills, bears save for grass and horses, with a hard face, his ears drawn back tight to his head. He smelled of fury. Peaceful, most stories called Ogier, almost as pacific as the traveling people. But some, a few, named them implacable enemies. Perrin had only seen Loyal angry once before. Perhaps he had been angry last night defending those children. Looking at Loyal's face, an old saying came back to him. To anger the Ogier and pull the mountains down on your head. Everyone took its meaning as to try to do something that was impossible. Perrin thought maybe the meaning had changed with the years. Maybe in the beginning it had been, anger the Ogier and you pull the mountains down on your head. Difficult to do, but deadly if accomplished. He did not think he would ever want Loyal, gentle, fumbling Loyal, with his broad nose always in a book, to become angry with him. It was Loyal who took the lead once they reached the site of the vanished Ogier Grove, bending their path a little southward. There were no landmarks, but he was sure of his direction, sure with every pace of the horses. Ogier could feel a way gate, sense it somehow, find it as certainly as a bee could find the hive. When Loyal finally dismounted, the grass was little more than knee-high on him. There was only a thick clump of brush to be seen, taller than most, leafy shrubs as tall as the Ogier. He ripped it all away, almost regretfully, stacking it to one side.
Perhaps the boys with the horses can use it for firewood when it dries.
And there was the waygate. Rearing against the side of the hill, it appeared more a length of gray wall than a gate, and the wall of a palace at that, thickly carved in leaves and vines, so finely done that they seemed almost as alive as the bushes had been. 3,000 years at least it had stood there, but not a trace of weathering marred its surface. Those leaves could have rippled with the next breeze. For a moment they all stared at it silently until Loyal took a deep breath and put his hand on the one leaf that was different from any other on the way gate. The trefoil leaf of Avendisora, the fabled tree of life. Until the moment his huge hand touched it, it seemed as much a part of the carving as all the rest, but it came away easily. Fael gasped loudly, and even the Aiel murmured. The air was full of the smell of unease. There was no saying who it came from, all of them perhaps. The stone leaves did seem to stir from an unfelt breeze now. They took a tinge of green, of life. Slowly a split appeared down the middle, and the halves of the waygate opened out, revealing not the hill behind, but a dull shimmering that faintly reflected their images.
Once, it is said, Loyal murmured, the waygates shone like mirrors, and those who walked the ways walked through the sun and the sky. Gone now, like this grove.
Hastily pulling one of the filled pole lanterns from his pack horse, Perrin got it alight. It is too hot out here, he said. A little shade would be good. He booted Stepper toward the waygate. He thought he heard Fael gasp again. The dun stallion balked, approaching his own dim reflection, but Perrin heeled him onward. Slowly, he remembered. It should be done slowly. The horse's nose touched its image hesitantly, then merged in as though walking into a mirror. Perrin moved closer to himself, touched. Icy cold slid along his skin, enveloping him hair by hair. Time stretched out. The cold vanished like a pricked bubble, and he was in the midst of endless blackness, the light of his pole lantern a crushed pool around him. Stepper and the pack horse whickered nervously. Gaul stepped through calmly and began preparing another lantern. Behind him was what seemed like a sheet of smoked glass. The others were visible out there, Loyal getting back on his horse, Fael gathering her reins, all of them creeping, barely moving. Time was different inside the ways.
Fael is upset with you, Gaul said, once he had his lantern alight.
It did not add much illumination. The darkness drank in light, swallowed it.
She seems to think you have broken some sort of agreement.
Bane and Chiad. Do not let them get you alone. They mean to teach you a lesson, for Fael's sake. And you will not sit on that animal so easily if they manage what they plan.
I agreed to nothing, Gull. I do what she's forced me to do through trickery. We will have to follow Loyal as she wants soon enough, but I mean to take the lead for as long as I can.
He pointed to a thick white line under Stepper's hooves. Broken and heavily pitted, it led off ahead, vanishing in the blackness only a few feet away.
That leads to the first guidepost. We will need to wait there for Loyal to read it and decide which bridge to take, but Fael can follow us that far.
Bridge, Gull murmured thoughtfully. I know that word. There is water in here?
No, it isn't exactly that kind of bridge. They look the same, sort of, but maybe Loyal can explain it.
The Aielman scratched his head.
Do you know what you are doing, Perrin?
No, Perrin admitted, but there's no reason for Fael to know that. Gull laughed.
It is fun to be so young, is it not, Perrin?
Frowning, uncertain whether the man was laughing at him, Perrin heeled Stepper on, drawing the pack horse behind. The lantern light would not be visible at all in here, 20 or 30 paces from its edge. He wanted to be completely out of sight before Fael came through. Let her think he had decided to go on without her. If she worried for a few minutes, until she found him at the guidepost, it was the least she deserved.